Welcome back to the Elastica podcast with me, Christopher Atkins, and I'm joined once more by the Elastica.com's Rio Coimbra. Hello, Rio.
Hello, Chris.
It's nice to have you back, Rio. You had a week off last week, and I thought we were going to miss out again this week with a hurricane that's about to batter your side of the world.
Yeah, that's right. It seems the most of the east coast of the U.S. over here is shutting down. It's supposed to hit overnight, so I have a few more hours of freedom until apparently the world will start falling apart over here. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll leave those kind of trivial matters for another time, and we'll head on to the life or death scenario of football. It's been another interesting week. Maybe not as crazy as some weeks we focused on recently, Rio, but there's still some stories we can have a chat about today. I think somewhat predictably we'll have to start with Fluminense again. I'm sorry if we're boring anyone with their pursuit of the title, but after last week's defeat to challengers Atletico, they've got themselves back on track. They got a win this weekend. Wasn't convincing at all, a 2-1 victory over Curitiba. Goals from the usual suspect, Wellington Nim. And this time, Thiago Neves. Curitiba got one late on through Everton Ribeiro. But Rio, it's been a similar story all season. We talk about it week after week. They don't play well, but and it's really, to use the old cliche, a hallmark of the champion, that they do get the 3 points despite their performance maybe not hitting the levels it could do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think in all fairness to Fluminense, they have a few star players who were inspired against Curitiba on Thursday. And, you know, I think for this game, certainly the name of the match was Wellington Nim, who we've spoken about a lot, and you know, the revelation of last year's tournament, who's been one of Fluminense's best players this season. And he was, you know, he got one goal, one assist, and was just lively the entire game. Just really, you know, always dangerous, especially in counterattacking opportunities. And you're right, Fluminense as a whole didn't play so well. I think, you know, what I've mentioned over and over again is just the resiliency of the side and their ability to battle it out. And Curitiba, you know, they were kind of in and out of the game. Fluminense, I think, dominated possession, but didn't necessarily look that inspired and creative with the ball. And Curitiba certainly worried Fluminense a little bit towards the end of the game. You know, Flu were up 2-0, then Curitiba scored towards the end. And in the last few minutes, it looked like Curitiba could snatch a point from the game. But Fluminense, I think more importantly for them, they bounced back from that defeat against Atlético Mineiro. So, you know, they've once again widened the gap up top. So they're back to 9 points ahead with a game more played than Atlético. Atlético only played next Wednesday. So, you know, it still looks like it's Fluminense's title to throw away at this point. I think it's very unlikely that Atlético can catch up with six games remaining and a 9-point difference to make up. It's certainly possible, but I wouldn't put my money on it.
Well, Grêmio remain in third place and Rio are 1-1 draw with Bahia. And that game, I guess, is more of note than with Grêmio fairly comfortable in the top four. That game's more of note for its consequences at the bottom of the table, with Bahia gaining another point then in their battle for survival. It takes them 4 points clear of Sport, and I guess 5 points clear of Palmeiras, who lost again this weekend. And with each passing game, these 1 point here and 1 point there really matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, certainly the relegation story of the season thus far is obviously Palmeiras. And you're right, you know, Bahia gained 1 point. They're sitting in 16th place, just above that relegation zone. And week after week, the Palmeiras faithful and in some ways a large part of Brazil sort of expect Palmeiras to have the usual big team late in the season comeback to escape relegation sensationally. But Palmeiras just keeps not making it. And, you know, they played a very good side in Internacional. And, you know, and there's no shame to losing to them. But at the same time, it's another opportunity that has gone amiss. And Palmeiras are still sitting in 18th place. And, you know, it just doesn't look promising. I mean, they're 5 points away from Bahia. So it's certainly nothing that can't be salvaged. And there's still a chance. And to be fair to Palmeiras, you know, I think they actually played pretty well against Internacional, even though they lost 2-1. And really the Internacional goalkeeper Muriel, who has every once in a while is capable of a mistake, but for the most part, you know, can be a very good goalkeeper. He was in sensational form in this game and had some spectacular saves. Much to the chagrin of Palmeirenses around the country. But like I said, a few games left, Palmeiras is still not getting the points they need. So they're going to need to do something real soon if they have any hope of avoiding relegation.
Well, for Bahia, Rio, I guess it's a valuable point against the team that are up the top of the table. And then next up, they're away to Portuguesa, who are just above them in the league. So I guess they'll now be looking at that game next week, and they'll be thinking that there's possibly more points to be gained from that match as well.
Yeah, certainly, and you know, this Bahia side is a little lax defensively sometimes, but I think on their day they're capable of scoring. Against anybody in the league. So, and in some ways, I would say that's kind of the opposite situation of Palmeiras, who can defend well at times, but they're so uninspired sometimes going forward that they rely a bit too much on their defense, and you just can't do that. So even if you have a fairly solid defensive structure, if it's put under pressure, you know, for most of a 90-minute match, you're going to leak goals. And if you're not putting them in the other end, then it's not going to add up at the end of the day. But yes, I think you're right. You know, Bahia certainly have the ability to stay in this league. And yeah, that game against Portuguesa is very winnable. Cruzeiro after that, Cruzeiro doesn't have too much more to play for. I think they have Ponte Preta after that. So it's a series of pretty decent fixtures for Bahia. And, you know, if they can widen that gap to the bottom four, it's going to make life much tougher for Palmeiras. And, you know, let's not forget the other relegation contenders as well, like Sport and Figueirense, who still look very much, at least dreaming of staying up. Tachko Goianiense, not so much. At 23 points, I think it's pretty much over for them, unfortunately.
Well, then for Palmeiras, Rio, then the next fixture this week then is against Botafogo. And Botafogo, I guess, are one of the more interesting teams in the league in terms of you can never quite predict what side's going to show up. But they are on the back of three consecutive wins now. They'll travel to Sao Paulo trying to extend that against Palmeiras. Two victories this week for Botafogo. They played twice. Due to a rearranged fixture. Goals for Seedorf in both Rio and also for Bruno Mendes, an 18-year-old striker who's really made an impact since coming in. He before his arrival, Botafogo, we spoke about, they were playing Alcasson up front, who's mainly attacking midfielder, more of a a dribbler, a creative force, but they struggled for a lack of a target man. They brought in this 18-year-old striker who did well in the Paulista Championship at the start of the year for Guarani, and he's got 5 goals in 5 appearances so far, which was probably unexpected when he arrived, even by the most positive Botafogo fan.
Yeah, Bruno Mendes, I'll be honest, I haven't seen too much of him, bar these couple of games for Botafogo. And, you know, he looks, you know, like a hungry young player, as you'd expect him to be. And he hasn't, you know, he's stepped up to the Botafogo team with a lot of confidence and you know, hasn't looked sort of shy or like he's feeling the pressure at all, which is always impressive to see from a young man. He's part of the Brazil under 20 squad, so he has a little bit of pedigree there. But really, if we're going to talk about Botafogo, you know, to me it goes back to Seedorf, who is, you know, we haven't mentioned him probably in a few weeks on this podcast, but sort of midway through the season, we talked about the impact that he's had since transferring from Milan to Brazil and to Botafogo. And, you know, to me, he's still arguably the best player of the tournament, certainly has a shout in for that award at the end of the season, and continues, you know, to score goals, to provide goals, to set the tempo in midfield, and just the leadership that he has. You know, if you follow any of the news coming out from the club, it's clear that he's become such an important player in that sort of squad. And all the players respect him a lot, and you know, he sort of is a big figure in training and has just become overall so important for them. And, you know, let's not forget that Botafogo still have a lot to play for. You know, they might be 8 points behind São Paulo in chase for the top four finish for the Libertadores qualification, but it's still possible. And as you and I were discussing right before the podcast, with the chance of either Grêmio or São Paulo winning the Sudamericana, and meaning that, you know, one of those teams automatically qualifies for the Libertadores, it means that a top five might be okay to make the Libertadores, and so Botafogo certainly are in with a shout there, since they're in sixth place, just 1 point behind Internacional. So, you know, they have a lot to play for, which is going to make life much tougher for Palmeiras next week.
And then, sorry, 1 second. Elsewhere than Rio, I guess the other result of note this weekend was Sao Paulo against Sport. Sport were at home then in Recife and ended up 4-2. Ended up losing 4-2 to Sao Paulo, who stay in fourth place then. 4 wins from the last 5 games. But this was a match, I guess, noted for a hat-trick for Lucas Moura in one of his last few games for Sao Paulo now.
Yeah, it was really a fun match to watch. And Lucas, it was his day. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, some would say that his hat trick was made easier to come by an awful goalkeeping error for that second goal. Pretty much, I forget the Sport's goalkeeper's name, but essentially a cross came in, the goalkeeper easily claimed it, and then sort of, you know, out of habit, almost kind of bounced the ball on the ground to kind of pick it back up without noticing that Lucas was sort of right behind him, and Lucas just pounced on it, turned around and slotted it into the empty net. But his first goal was very nice. And then for the third goal, I think Sport's defense was probably to blame for being rather static, but it was a nice give and go for a goal between Lucas and Luis Fabiano. But really, overall, even the goals aside, Lucas just had a tremendous match, lots of energy, and clearly so motivated in this game. And Chris, as you mentioned, you know, he's heading towards the end of his time at São Paulo, his last few games. São Paulo very much, you know, making sure that they hold on to this fourth place position. for the Libertadores for next season, and I'm sure that Lucas wants to make sure that that happens for the club before he leaves and hops on the plane to Paris. So it was a nice moment, Lucas's first hat trick in his career, and I'm sure there's going to be more to follow later on from what is a very special and talented player.
Well, Rio, in this news section each week, we're used to both my side, Cruzeiro, and your side, Flamengo, embarrassing themselves. It's a very common feature of this section. Cruzeiro lost this week to Ponte Preta, but we'll leave this week's matches there for now. Flamengo, though, Rio, we've spoken before about the management of the club. We've been very critical of them. And we've been critical of their handling of the club's finances in particular. It was announced this week by the vice director of finance, that's Michel Levy. Michel Levy announced that they hadn't paid the wages for September yet, and he was unsure at what point they would be able to pay September's wages. It's not the best situation for the best supported club in Brazil to be in, is it?
No, and you know, the most disappointing thing is that this type of thing, you know, sort of happens over and over again at Flamengo and you know, at many other clubs in Brazil as well. And it was last season that even again towards the end of the season, the Flamengo seems to struggle financially. We've talked a lot before about how they don't even have a main shirt sponsor still, which is kind of absolutely ridiculous. And the main reason why is that Flamengo keep hoping, because of a club of their stature, they assume that they should get an enormous deal, and until an offer comes of a size that they think is worthy of the club, they don't accept anything, and instead they just go months and months without receiving any money for a major shirt sponsorship. And you know, if we're talking more specifically about the current moment, yes, you're right, they haven't paid wages in a couple of months. Not only that, but it just came out as well a couple of days ago that when Flamengo and Davide parted ways a few months ago, Davide, who was the striker of Flamengo, who never really quite fit in, never really gained the support of the fans, Flamengo parted with him and came to an agreement that they would pay him, I think, 3 million reais. And Davide ended up at Curitiba, of course. But it just came out a couple of days ago that Flamengo still haven't paid that money. And if they don't do so, I think by the end of this month, they have to pay an extra 50% on top of that, which Flamengo essentially said, yeah, that's probably going to happen. So it's just the type of thing that you see over and over again. You know, not only do they have all these payments that they need that they can't afford, but they sort of run into all these clauses that they set up, you know, always assuming that, oh, you know, we'll kind of worry about that later. And it's really ridiculous because they end up needing to pay a lot more than they actually have to. So it's just honestly rather annoying and frustrating as a fan of the club and as a general football fan in a lot of ways. And the only other thing I'll add here is that on top of all of this, it's extra frustrating because this is right at the end of the season. This is the time in the season when the club should be thinking about, and preparing for the following season, right? You know, granted, Flamengo are by no means out of this potential relegation. You know, they seem rather safe right now. If they get a couple more wins, they will be safe. So obviously everybody at the club is working towards that, and it'd be premature for the management team to start thinking about next season. But what the directors at the club and the staff at the club should be thinking about is preparing for that next season, and yet they have no money. So how can they do anything? They can't go out and buy any players, even for free transfers at the moment. They can't even have confidence that they'd be able to pay for their salary. Last season, as I mentioned, they were in a similar situation. They ended up losing Thiago Neves to Fluminense because of that. They didn't have the money to pay for his release from Saudi Arabian club. I forget the name. But Flamengo had a player who were in a position to have him, but because they didn't have the money at the time, they weren't able to, and thus he went to Fluminense, who's their major rival. And once again, they're in the situation where they can't even start thinking about next season. And meanwhile, you look around at clubs like Corinthians, who are already talking about the deals that they're preparing to make for next season and improving that squad and making sure that they look to retain the Libertadores and look to have a deep enough squad to challenge for the Brasileiro at the same time. That's the type of thing that a club like Flamengo should be doing, but they're just not in a position to do it because of the way this club is run. So that's my rant about that, and it's just overall quite disappointing, really.
Well, Michel Levy had a fairly terrible week, all in all. Of course, I guess there is some possible sunshine on the horizon with this Adidas kit deal then, Rio, but even that's been handled in some kind of complicated fashion by the club to try and bring in some immediate cash. But I'll leave that for another day. But Michel Levy then, Rio, two matters of interest from Flamengo this week that didn't quite go to plan, shall we say. He told the club's members that he published their accounts or released their accounts within a week for everyone to have a look at and make sure all was going to plan. Somewhat predictably, that hasn't happened, and the club's accounts are still unaccounted for despite this assurance. And also, our regular contributor James tweeted about this week. There was some proposal about a plan to change the Rio de Janeiro State Championship to add an extra round at the end, which would make a convoluted system even more convoluted. And they were going to add to the two group stages then a kind of playoff round. I guess to make sure everyone has a chance of winning it, which, as we both know, doesn't really happen. The big four clubs, Botafogo, Vasco, Fluminense, well, the three of the big four rejected this proposal. Somewhat surprisingly, the decision has been postponed for the moment because Flamengo haven't submitted their response to this proposal. It's all fairly predictable where Flamengo are concerned at the moment.
Yeah, and I bet if anybody asked a Flamengo employee how come they missed the date for their reply, they probably say, "Well, you know, we're still thinking about it because it's a complicated matter." But in reality, I'm sure the real answer is they just completely forgot about it and somebody missed the deadline entirely.
Oh, we'll leave your rant on Flamengo for another week because it seems to come up about once every month or two that we get a good opportunity to let you vent some frustration. And I think it's somewhat healthy that you get to do that every now and again.
Yeah, it's sort of my Flamengo football, you know, psychiatrist hour. It's good.
We have news from China then, Ryu, over with me, that we have some champions in the form of Muriqi, Cleo, and Palau. All three became champions of the Chinese Super League this week with Guangzhou Evergrande, which is also the team of Dario Conca, the former Fluminense midfielder, a last-minute winner in their match this weekend from striker Gao Lin, meant that they won the championship with a week to spare. There's been some reports, though, from Brazil, Rio, that Conca is going to be heading back to Fluminense next year. This all seems fairly wishy-washy and based on some news that his agent was coming to China, even though his agent and Fluminense have both denied the fact that there was ever going to be a deal. With 18 months left on his massive, I think that's the only way we can describe it, his massive contract in China, I don't really see any substance in this from my side. I don't see how Fluminense could afford him, to put it bluntly.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those cases where Fluminense fans remember Conca quite fondly since he was voted player of the year for the season. When was it? 2008 or more
20, recently? 2010 when they won the league. He was the player of the year in Brazil, and I think he's now won 3 league titles in 3 years if you count Fluminense, and now 2 in China.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, as I said, Fluminense fans love Conca and the time that he spent at the club. So any time there's possible news about it, it's just the type of thing that the media jumps on just to have a story that they know Fluminense fans are going to read. But as you said, you know, Conca's salary over there is enormous. He's one of the best paid players in the world. And if you were to go to Fluminense, he probably need to cut that by, you know, 75%, if not more. And at the same time, you know, Fluminense don't really need him. I mean, he's a quality player, and obviously if they would be able to just sign him for an affordable price, they would. But at the same time, they have Deco, they have Wagner, they have Thiago Neves, who are all quality players who play in and around the same type of positions that Conca plays. And Fluminense is doing quite well. Last time I checked, sitting at the top of the table and likely will be crowned champion soon. So as I said, you know, media likes to write about these types of stories, even if there's not much substance to them.
Yeah, and I guess you mentioned all those players who they've brought in since his departure. I think Deco was there right at the end of Conca's spell of Fluminense. I think even with the talk that Thiago Neves might be heading for Europe in January, the financial element is one point of it, but there would be little need, I guess, for Fluminense to even risk paying out that much money for a player who is already, I think, 29, possibly 30 in the coming months. It would seem a bit unnecessary to even consider the kind of financial implications, even if they could afford it.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, so moving on, Ria, we have this section each week where we look at a bit of a outlandish story that emerges in the Brazilian media, and this week I know you've got a very special case for us.
Yeah, well, it's not quite the same vein as some of the other sort of ridiculous stories that we've had, but in some ways, it's a bit of a nostalgic story because we're going to talk about a 43-year-old player who was quite successful as a Brazil international for the short amount of games that he played for Brazil. And we're talking about Túlio Maravilha, who, you know, who was a big name in Brazil in the 90s and is still a name that many Brazilians know quite well just because of the sheer amount of clubs that he's played in Brazil. But as I said, he's 43 years old, and he's, at least according to himself, close to scoring 1,000 goals. He's at goal number 7 away from the 1,000th goal. Apparently that puts him as the top active player goal scorer of the world. And the reason why we're bringing him up right now, not only besides the fact that he's close to his 1,000th goal, but it's because he's actually re-signed for Botafogo recently, since that was the club that he had tremendous success with in the mid-90s in Brazil, where he was Brazilian champion, and it was overlapped with his time as part of the Brazil national team. But you know, he won't be playing for the first team, so it's not quite as ridiculous as it might sound. He's going to be playing for their reserve teams, for their under 23 at the age of 40. So really should be more the over 43 side, I guess. But you know, he's looking for his last 7 goals. He's going to be wearing the number 1,000 jersey, which is quite unusual. Quite sure how they can fit so many numbers in the back, but you know, it's just one of these interesting side stories that you sort of read on page 4 of the papers these days.
Well, I guess we had a couple of number 200s a couple of weeks ago with Neymar and the Chinese player Chen Zhidao, both wearing 200. I think it was on the same night a couple of weeks ago. But I guess if you're going to look at it in a slightly funny way, he's not that much older than Seydor, so perhaps there is still a role for him at first team level.
Yeah, that's true. I think some people might actually seriously argue that Tulio could still do the job because he does score wherever he goes. That's very true of him. But I think he's been playing for some very low level opposition. Playing for low level sides and against low level opposition for the past several years now. So I think he's had a bit of a dive in terms of form, and comparing him to Seydorf, I think is a bit of an insult towards the Dutch master, or the Suriname master, I should say.
Well, we'll leave it there for news in Rio, and we'll have a look at a club.
Very muffled.
And interestingly, Rio, this week we're not going to look at a club in Brazil, but we're going to look at a club that's very Brazilian-influenced, and that's Shakhtar Donetsk in Ukraine, who I'm sure you know quite a bit about now, as they had a good win this week against, who was it again, Rio?
I wasn't quite following there. What were you talking about?
We're going to talk about Shakhtar Donetsk after their win against Chelsea in the Champions League. And Rio has just about wiped away all his tears from that match. And then they restarted today after the defeat to Man United. But Shakhtar, Rio, a massive Brazilian influence in their team, has been for a few years now. And as much as I've seen people this week very much kind of praising them for picking these Brazilians out of nowhere, They do have a very good scouting network, but they're not so much picking them from nowhere as picking the right players at the right price.
Yeah, and you're right. They have a good ability to pick out players that are emerging within Brazil and doing quite well. I mean, to be honest, it's not like they're signing virtually unknown players. They're signing the type of players that if anybody pays attention to the Brazilian, they sign some promising youngsters, the types of, if we're looking today at the Brazilian league, you look at the types of players like Bernard and Wellington Ney. Shakhtar usually goes for those types of players that, they're not the Neymar and Lucas and Oscar level of players, but they're kind of that one sort of tier, I guess you could say, right below them of making news. And at the same time, it's not like they're signing them for no money. Willian, who's one of their more noteworthy Brazilian players, I believe was signed for £12 million from Corinthians back in 07 or 08 or whenever that was. It's not as if they're signing, some hidden gem for $1 million from, the second tier of Brazilian football. If anything, as I said, if you pay attention to the Brazilian league or, pay attention to this podcast, really, I think you end up hearing about the type of players that a club like Shakhtar pays attention to and does a good job scouting. To be fair, because there are some other players that, seem to be the flavor of the month and don't necessarily pan out. I think more so than sort of talking about some of their good scouting, it's just kind of this club atmosphere that they've created, the sheer number of Brazilians that they have over there. And the way that they have them playing together, the fluency of the attacking football they have over there, I think that's what deserves a lot of credit and a lot of merit. I think one of the more interesting things is that the manager over there, Luchescu, I read a little while ago that he actually speaks fluent Portuguese. He learned it to essentially be able to communicate his players, which, you know, I think is pretty unique. Romanian coach, so certainly, you know, Portuguese was nowhere near any of the classes that he was growing up with.
It's funny you mentioned that, Rio. I was reading this week that because for a long time they've gone with this approach of kind of Brazilian flair up front and then Eastern European kind of stubbornness in defense. But they've introduced this year an Armenian attack midfielder by the name of Henrik Mkhitaryan. I think that's how it's said. I'm not 100%. And he's really shown. He's very much the focal point of the Shakhtar team in midfield now, in the role that Jadson used to play before his return to Sao Paulo. And the interesting thing is he actually speaks Portuguese as well, despite being Armenian, having spent some time in Sao Paulo when he was growing up, which is was a connection between the club he was coming through at in Armenia and Sao Paulo Football Club. So there's these strange connections being thrown up at Shakhtar that seem to be working very well. And his introduction to the team in place of Jadson has been very much credited with the improved form of Alex Teixeira on the flank. He plays from one flank normally, William from the other. And Alex is a player who was very highly rated in Brazil, like William. He went for a big fee and had a slow start in Ukraine, but he got the first goal against Chelsea. He got another goal this weekend. I think it's 8 goals already this campaign. He's a player who, if he can continue this form, a bit like William, I can see being linked to some of Europe's bigger clubs.
Yeah, I think so. And Alex Teixeira is I think, still only 22, maybe 23. So, you know, he certainly still has a lot in front of him career-wise. And, you know, I think he was, you know, certainly one of the players that he was playing for Vasco. And yeah, $6 million is you know, was at the time kind of considered a lot for that type of player, because he had played mostly, kind of impressed mostly in state championship games in Brazil. So it was a little bit of a leap of faith to Shakhtar. So, you know, I should give him credit there for their scouting network, since I think a lot of other European clubs would have waited a little bit longer to see how much Alex could sort of consistently prove as a starter for Vasco, as opposed to sort of the handful of first team appearances he had in the Brasileiro, mostly as a substitute. You know, I won't claim that I watch Shakhtar regularly, you probably know, sounds like you know more than me about how he's been adapting and stepping up this year. But certainly the talent is there, and from a young age you could see that he was full of technical qualities and just a very speedy player that can kind of play either as a more natural winger or as kind of a more creative midfielder. So it's good to hear that he's doing well, and you know I'm sure, yeah, you know, the Shakhtar, with the way that they've been impressing the Champions League in the past few years, a lot of the higher tier of European clubs are now paying attention to them. And you know, Chelsea tried to sign Willian over the summer and even last January, and it might be Alex Teixeira's turn not too long from now.
And of course, we can't forget in all this, real, a lot of people, when they hear the name Shakhtar, the first player they want to know about is Douglas Costa, who was on the bench, I think, for that Chelsea game. But he's also there, and I think he's also getting on all right from what I hear. So there's quite a talent pool, as well as Fernandinho, who not long back was in the Brazil national team setup and possibly could get back sometime in the future if he can displace either Ramirez or Paulinho, I guess. But we spoke briefly at the start then about how they do very much go for that second tier of Brazilian player, not the Neymar or Lucas or Ganso. And I think that's very much evidence from one of their more recent acquisitions, if we can call them an acquisition. That's Wellington at Sao Paulo, who they negotiated 30% of his ownership when they sold Jadson to the Brazilian side. So Wellington's still at Sao Paulo and had a long injury this season, knee injury. I think it was cruciate ligaments. He was out from early in the state championship until about a month or two ago now. But since his return, he's impressed greatly at Sao Paulo. He was considered to be in with a shot of the Olympic squad before his injury. And I know you watched him last week against your Flamengo side, Rio. What did you make of Wellington? And do you think he would be a good purchase for Shakhtar?
I do, absolutely. I'm actually very impressed by this young man. And I think maybe a year back or so, it seemed as if, you know, Sao Paulo had two sort of gems at the defensive midfield position in the shape of Casemiro and Wellington. And Casemiro was really the one that was grabbing more attention and making more news, was a big part of the Brazil under 20 side. Some people were even claiming that he should get a call up to the full national side. There were rumors of European interest, but really Wellington, you know, he sort of went away from the spotlight because of that bad injury that you spoke of. But before the injury and certainly after this injury, he's been really, really good for Sao Paulo. He's a very intelligent player, has a lot of stamina, very athletic, sort of lanky, has long legs and sort of long strides, so he can cover a lot of ground. And even though he's really plays more conservatively a lot of times for Sao Paulo, I think one of originally at least, I think one of the nice things that we've seen under Ney Franco is that he's been playing more of as a box-to-box midfielder and using taking advantage of that athleticism. And you know, he's surprisingly technical. He can kind of sort of take players one-on-one and beat them. And in some ways, he reminds me of Hamidis from Chelsea, just in terms of that stamina and that box-to-box side of his game. And sometimes he sort of, you know, pops up in the wing and then looks like a winger that can get past players and whip across into the box. And like, you know, he's just there's a lot about him that impresses me. And I think, as you said, Shakhtar were quite astute in picking him as a part, you know, as a player to take a stake on when they sold Jorge Sanchez Sao Paulo, because they were given several options, including Casemiro, but they went for Wellington, who at the time was not sort of widely recognized as the better choice. So credit to Shakhtar there on that choice.
I think the Ramirez comparison is quite interesting, because one of Wellington's big features is his versatility. You mentioned that he's played this box-to-box role previously last season when he was alongside Casemiro. He was in far more of a kind of anchor man role in the midfield, whereas Casemiro went for the more box-to-box position in the defensive midfield duo. And also in the state championships, he was used at right back when Sao Paulo was struggling in that position. So a bit like his Chelsea senior, he can play a variety of roles when needed, which I guess is always something coaches and scouts look for when they're analyzing these players. And it's definitely something that Casemiro maybe could look to, because he doesn't have that. He is very much a one position player. But Wellington's also, he's been very unfortunate. We spoke about this injury this year, ruling him out of any possible Olympic selection. He was also the captain of the under 20 side, and then got injured and missed the World Cup in 2011. So he's not had the best of times in the last couple of years. So I guess in that sense, it would be nice if something worked out for him in his career.
Yeah, and you know, at the same time, it's scouts and clubs are always hesitant when they look at injury records of players, especially at such a young age, to have had a couple of serious injuries. It always sort of raises an eyebrow and makes you wonder if they're just unlucky or if this is actually, you know, something to do with their body and they're just, you know, susceptible to injuries, and hopefully that's not the case for Wellington. Hopefully just a sort of bad luck, and you know, he can sort of run with it now and be able to make something of himself, because as we mentioned, he's got sort of the build for it and the athleticism for it, and like I said, he's got the talent and the skill and the intelligence, more importantly. So he's entirely capable of making a splash and becoming an important player for whatever club he ends up at in the next few years.
Finally then, Rio, just before we round up this section and round up the show, you mentioned that Willian then, Shakhtar's left-sided player, he cuts inside, he's very creative. You mentioned he was linked with both Chelsea and Tottenham this summer. Both rumours seem to be still persisting. Do you think he's up to that level from what you've seen of him playing for Shakhtar? And what kind of move do you think is right for him? Because obviously he's got this very prohibitive price tag at the moment, which means there's maybe only a handful of clubs that could afford him.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, I think you kind of sort of said it correctly there, which this price tag is the main detractor for him not moving on, because I'm sure there are many clubs in the world that would like to have him, but maybe just not at these prices that Shakhtar have been asking for. You know, I think in the 30 million range, which is, you know, you have to be a pretty special talent. You know, I think at the time when Chelsea made the bid, Shakhtar, I think Chelsea made a bid of maybe 25 million, if I'm not incorrect. And, I think Shakhtar came back and said, you know, Willian, we view him as big of a talent as Eden Hazard, and so Chelsea should be willing to pay just as much. I don't think Willian is anywhere near that level. I think he's quite a good player. I think he could do quite well in the Premier League, but I don't think he's at that sort of upper echelon of players that could be considered world class. With that said, you know, if we're talking about Chelsea and Tottenham, I think the time has gone now for him to go to Chelsea, because, you know, he with Oscar and Hazard and Mata and also Moses coming off the bench, I just don't think they now have a need for a player like him. But certainly at Tottenham, I could see him fitting into that side. The most natural position for him would be to take Lennon's position on that right side. He can sort of do a lot of what Lennon does in terms of playing the more classic winger role. He's quick. He's not as quick as Lennon, but he's quick. But I think he does offer kind of more vision and more intelligence, and can also have the added ability of you know, he can sort of run towards the box and cut inside and cut towards goal, which Lennon can't really do that effectively. You know, Lennon's a bit of a one-minded player in that regard. So I think Willian would improve a side like Tottenham. I'm not sure they're willing to pay the figures that Shakhtar are asking for, though.
I think that's going to be very much the crux of the matter. And I know this week he did interviews where he spoke about Tottenham, he spoke about Chelsea, he even virtually offered himself up to those clubs and the two Milan sides. But out of the four, you could only really see Chelsea affording that much. And like you said, with all the signings they've made in his position this summer, it's going to be very difficult for him to persuade them that he's actually needed at Stamford Bridge these days. So, unfortunately for Willian, who I know would like to get in that 2014 World Cup squad and maybe doesn't think that's possible at Shakhtar, he's going to have to hope they have a good run in the Champions League again and thrust himself back into competition that way, I think.
Yep, I think that's exactly right.
Well, I think we'll leave it there for this week. It's been a pleasure once more, Rio.
Absolutely. I always enjoy talking football and ranting about Flamengo.
You can keep up to date with all your Brazilian football news at SambaFoot. You can also check out the Elastico, where we have a whole series of news and player profiles on all the latest rising talent from around the world. So please go check that out. And if that's not for you, we'll see you again next week when we'll be back with another episode. That's all for now. Goodbye.